We're thankful tonight for having Brother Dave Durant. He seems like he fits well in this right here. He does a good job. And his talk is on seeing double. Brother Dave.
Sweet home Alabama. Nice to be here again. First thing I'm going to do in honor of Brother Jack and the fact that the air condition's not working too well. A little love to deliver. We 2 weeks ago we were on the West Coast, Northwest, and Sister Glenda Hawk, who has been at your convention, sends her love, and Brother and Sister Bruce, who have been at your convention, send their love. The New Albany Louisville brethren send their love to you, and my mother does especially, and I spoke on the phone with Brother Bob Gray the other day, and he also wished to be remembered to you. And those of you who are here every year know that Sister Jane and John Henderson get here on a yearly basis. And while she did not specifically ask for their love to be sent, she's had a series of small strokes and she's in very bad shape. So I know she's here in spirit and would certainly like you to know that she is. Y'all have a handout? Good. Seeing double. This is not about needing an optometrist. This is another look at the concepts of the Jewish double. And what I would like to do this evening, hopefully, is to make this as ultimately simple as humanly possible. Because I think the brethren have gotten so tangled up in some of the concepts of this Jewish double prophecy that they've forgotten its simplicity and they've forgotten where its parts come from. And they have, well, for lack of a better term, manhandled the parts of it to where they aren't recognizable anymore. The Jewish double prophecy, sometimes we call it parallel ages, has two parts. One is about the Jewish double. We're going to look at that first. The other is about what we would call extensions of the Jewish double. That comes from a totally different place in Scripture and should not be confused with the initial prophecy, even though it relates to it. So we're going to look at them separately and then see how they relate to each other. All right, the basis of our discussion is what we normally call the Jewish double. The first part, the least complex part of your handout, the first page of it, looks pretty simple, doesn't it? And it is. It is ultimately simple. And it comes from three scriptures which you have there on your handout. Zechariah chapter 9, Jeremiah chapter 16, and Isaiah chapter 40. Let's look at them. Zechariah 9. If you take the time to look at these in your own Bibles, they might mean more to you just by staring at them. Because this is not a complex prophecy, we just have three texts, and they all say the same thing. What they say is diagrammed on that page. They say it from slightly different perspectives. They have slightly different detail in them, but they are all saying the same thing. Let's look at first chapter 9 of Zechariah. First of all, verse 9, and this is just to get a time setting. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout in triumph, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, your king is coming to you. He is just and endowed with salvation, humble and mounted on a donkey, even a colt, the foal of a donkey. Now, that's there to set a date. You know the dates when Jesus rode into Jerusalem just before he was crucified. So this is not a date anybody has any trouble with. What year was that? 33. Okay, you got it. This prophecy is real plain as to where we're standing as we're considering it. 33 A.D. And it shows some of the results, verse 10. I will cut off the chariot from Ephraim and the horse from Jerusalem, and the bow of war will be cut off. In other words, Israel's cast off. That happened then, didn't it? Just before his crucifixion, Jesus said, your house is left unto you desolate. That's all that says. Fancy way of saying it, but that's all it says. And then it says what he's going to do instead. He will speak peace to the Gentiles. The age during which he deals not with the Jews, but with the Gentiles, what do we call? Gospel age. Okay. See how simple this prophecy is. Ultimately simple. Then it goes on to the millennium. His dominion will be from sea to sea, from the river to the ends of the earth. As for you, now he's talking to Jerusalem because he's casting them off. Because of the blood of my covenant with you, I have set your prisoners free from the waterless pit. This is talking about the time when the kingdom would be reestablished. And Israel would be set free. So they know by this prophecy that they're casting off is not going to be eternal. It is partial. Only for a period of time. Return to the stronghold, O prisoners who have the hope. This very day I am declaring that I will restore double to you. This very day. You already told me what that day was. It's when he rode into Jerusalem. So we have a date. You may notice on your handout, right smack there in the middle, is the date 33. That's why it's there, because this prophecy says it should be there. Now, the way the prophecy is worded is going to vary from translation to translation. But he says, this very day I'm declaring that I will restore double to you. Well, how's the King James read? Render double to you. Okay. The word double, simple word, real simple word, it kind of means doubled over. It doesn't mean twice as much. That's not the meaning of the word. It just means doubled over. So he's saying, look, I've been dealing with you for a long time. You haven't exactly been kosher. So, I'm going to give you the same amount of time when I don't deal with you. That's the concept of the double. He says, after that, we'll get to the kingdom and I will do some nice things for you. Because I made a covenant with you. He mentions that word covenant right in this particular prophecy. Okay. Let's go to the next prophecy, Jeremiah 16. So far what we've done is simply demonstrated that God would cast off Israel, take on the Gentiles, and the implication, even though it's not really stated so clearly, the implication is he would take on the Gentiles for the same amount of period of time that he's casting off the Jews. That's why he uses this word double. Jeremiah 16. Let's start with verse 14. Same prophecy, it's going to use the same word, it's going to have some different perspective to it. Therefore, behold, days are coming, declares the Lord, when it will no longer be said, as the Lord lives, who brought up the sons of Israel out of the land of Egypt, but as the Lord lives, who brought up the sons of Israel from the land of the north, from all the countries where he had banished them, for I will restore them to their own land, which I gave to their fathers. Now, this is a little more dramatic than that one we saw in Zechariah. Zechariah said, look, I'm going to put Jerusalem on the side and go to the Gentiles. Here he says, when I bring you back, it's going to be so dramatic that you're going to think the Passover was nothing. You're not going to say, the Lord delivered us from Egypt. You're going to say, the Lord delivered us from all over the whole world. This is going to be so dramatic that the Passover is going to be a thing of the past for all practical purposes. Makes it kind of important, doesn't it? Okay. For I will restore them to their own land, which I gave to their fathers. Now, verse 16. Behold, I am going to send for many fishermen, declares the Lord. Now, he's sort of telling them how he's going to bring them out of those lands where they're going to be scattered. This is probably the Zionist movement, early 1800s and following. And they will fish for them. And afterward I will send for many hunters, and they will hunt them from every mountain and every hill and from the clefts of the rocks. We have no doubt seen some of that with Russian pogroms, with the Nazi movement. For all we know, there will yet be more. The Jews are not exactly loved all over the face of the earth. But God says, I'm going to use that to bring you back to your own land. For my eyes are on all their ways. They are not hidden from my face, nor is their iniquity concealed from mine eyes. In other words, the Lord says, I'm watching you. He has watched them, obviously, in the past. So, he's just said what he's going to do for them. But the next verse says, but first. You ever been a little kid? Your parents say, we're going to do this, and you think, that's great. And then they come up with that. But first! Well, that's exactly what God's doing here. He's saying, but first, before I bring you back, here's something we've got to take care of. But first, I will repay them their iniquity double and their sin, because they have polluted my land, they have filled my inheritance with the carcasses of their detestable idols and with their abominations. Okay, there's the double. The word appears again, that word double. And he says, first, before I restore them, you know Jesus cast them off. Before I restore them, I will let them experience this double of my disfavor. He gives a reason. I don't know whether you ever noticed this before, but it's an incredible reason. He says, because of the carcasses. And then he uses that word abomination. You're used to that because you're used to abomination applying to what? The mass. The mass is an abomination because it keeps sacrificing Jesus and therefore makes his sacrifice no good. It's precisely what this is saying. Jesus was sacrificed and the Jews kept sacrificing animals. And God says, that's the same as the mass. It doesn't recognize Jesus' sacrifice. So the very things you were doing under the law have now become an abomination. So I'm casting you off. And he does it right there at the point of the crucifixion. So right again, that center is the time of the cross. And he says, I will repay you double before I start bringing you back to your land. You notice that in this context. The context is the bringing back into the land. So we can assume, not even reading too much in between the lines, but assuming in these kind of words, that what he has in mind is bringing them back to the land. That should mark the end of this double. Now, on your chart there, I've supplied some dates. We're not going to go into the whole deal, but the fact is, Jesus started dealing with Israel when they became Israel. You remember, in what we call the patriarchal age, he dealt with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, etc. Those were individuals. But Jacob had 12 sons. And when Jacob died, it was no longer a case of dealing with individuals. It was a case of dealing with all the tribes. "Ye only have I known of all the families of the earth," was his statement in Amos. And so it is at that point that this period of favor started, at the death of Jacob in 1813 B.C., And we know when it ended because Zechariah told us when it ended, when he rode into Jerusalem just before his crucifixion. That's a period of 1845 years. So, without any deduction, just the fact that that word double means the same amount over again, you know that their disfavor is also going to be 1845 years. And you also know some special kind of favor is going to the Gentiles because he said so. He said, "I'm going to set aside Jerusalem and I'm going to turn to the Gentiles." Zechariah said that. The word is nations in my translation, but that's the word. It's Gentiles. Okay. One text left. Isaiah 40. Same story. Different Hebrew word for double, but it means the same thing. And this one takes the perspective at standing at the end here. 1845 years after 33. In other words, 1878. The others took the perspective of standing here when in the middle when the double was pronounced. This one is standing at the end. "Comfort, O comfort my people, says your God, speak kindly or comfortably to Jerusalem, and call out to her that her warfare has ended." Now that could stumble you. You look at Israel right now, hardly looks like her warfare has ended, has it? But God's point here is, look, at this point, you don't have to fight for yourselves anymore. I'm going to do your fighting for you. So at 1878 following, it's saying she need not do the warring. He is going to do the warring for her. Now, the marginal translation is excellent. It doesn't say warfare at all. It says appointed time. I think that's the best. But I just wanted to point out that warfare is not a bad translation because they don't have to do their fighting anymore. God says, all right, the disfavor is over. I'm on your side now. So warfare's okay. But the margin says, tell her that her appointed time is accomplished. Her double has ended. As a matter of fact, that's what it says. Call out to her that her warfare has ended, that her iniquity has been removed, that she has received of the Lord's hand double for all her sins. That's the whole subject. There is no more of the Jewish double. That's it. I'm sure almost everybody in this room thinks it's more complicated than that, but it's not. This is how the only three texts that talk about it. Now, we're going to see that in Daniel 9, it's going to give us things related to it that we all get hung up on. But you have just seen everything there is to see about the Jewish double. God dealt from the death of Jacob till 33 with the nation. He cast them off in favor of dealing with the Gentiles exclusively for the same period of time. And he returns them to their land starting at the end of that double. That's it. That's it. Now, let's look at a few more details. I'll be repetitive here, but I want to make the point. Please notice that none of these scriptures we have just looked at deals with anything other than an 1845-year parallel. The age and parallels that we always talk about don't come from this prophecy. They come from the 9th chapter of Daniel. And we'll take them up here in due course. I would also like you to know, just for comfort's sake, because a lot of brethren have a hard time with all kinds of chronological theories that go floating around the Bible student movement. They get very, very complicated. And they argue about how long the period of the kings was, or how long the period of the desolation of the land was, or how long the period of the judges was. You've heard the arguments. They won't stop. But they must stop. When you look at this chart and you go backwards from 33 to Jacob, that period which God locked in by this prophecy contains the judges, the kings, the desolation. Everything that anybody has ever argued about is right there. In other words, God gave this as a time lock prophecy so that you don't even have to worry about somebody's fancy calculations, because anything that's done to change the desolation, the judges, or the kings ruins this. And it's based on three scriptures. How many more do you want? Those periods can't change, or this period would change. And it wouldn't go back to the death of Jacob. What a simple, elegant chronology God has invented. Now, I want to throw you for a loop for a moment. What we are talking about, the parallels between that Jewish system and the Christian system that followed it, has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with the working definitions of Jewish and gospel ages. I don't have a chart here. But one thing brethren do, and it's exasperating, is for some reason they think these parallels that we did have something to do with the Jewish and gospel ages. Now, they occur in the Jewish and gospel ages, but they are not the Jewish and the gospel ages. I mean, take a look at this for a moment. AD 33. Is that the beginning of the gospel age? Maybe you're not sure. AD 1878, is that the end of the gospel age? Maybe you're not sure. Just in case you have been pulled into that whirlpool of confusion that makes these parallels the same as those two ages, let me quote from you from the chart that you pull right out of Volume 1, Brother Russell's definition, first of the Jewish age, from Jacob's death, well, that's right, isn't it? This started at Jacob's death. But on the chart, he says, it's from Jacob's death to the end of the 70 weeks. Now, you all might not have studied the 70 weeks, but a lot of you have. When does the 70 weeks end? What year? 36. Is that on here? No. It's not there. So that first hump, that first part of the double, is not the same as the Jewish age. Don't forget the first volume. It's not that simple. Now let me read Brother Russell's definition of the gospel age. From Jesus' baptism. Was Jesus baptized in 33? No. So all right away we can tell that this second half of this double has no equivalent to the gospel age. Just from the beginning. Jesus says, the gospel age is from Jesus' baptism to the completion of the church, which is His body. Was the church completed in 1878? I don't think so. We'd be wasting our time here. Please, next time you pull out a chart, read what Brother Russell said. It's remarkably accurate, hasn't changed to this day, and it says, this is not Jewish and gospel ages on the chart. Period. Don't get them confused. Well, what is it about? If it's not about the Jewish and gospel ages. It is about judgments on Israel and Babylon. Second volume concepts. We saw that when we read in Zechariah. He said, I'm going to cast off Israel. We saw it in Jeremiah. I'm going to bring them back, but first I'm going to cast them off for a double period. It's about judgments against that Jewish system. That's what it's about. Likewise, the second half is going to be judgments about the system that God favors then, which we call Christendom. It's about judgment on those two systems. That's what this is about. It's not about Jewish and gospel ages. It's about judgment on two systems. Let me read something to you. You've probably read it or had it read to yourself. This is from Volume 2, 1916 forward, page 5. Written in 1916. We saw in the Bible certain parallels between the Jewish and gospel age. We should have noted that these parallels follow the nominal systems to destruction in both cases and do not indicate the time of the glorification of the new creation. You've heard that, haven't you? I submit he's saying something elegantly simple there. He's saying what we just said. He's saying these parallels are about the judgment of the two systems. They are not about spiritual matters. They are about fraudulent spiritual matters. How many of you think Brother Russell made that statement in 1916? Nobody. I see a funny look on Sarah's face. What? I just read it out loud. Actually, he didn't make that statement in 1916. He repeated it in 1916. I always thought he put that there because he said, oh, 1914 didn't work. I got to explain it. What would you think if I told you, and I will, that he first made that statement in 1911? Doesn't that change everything? It's no longer an excuse for the 1914 failure because 1914 hadn't failed in 1911. And yet that's when he first makes this statement, and he makes it several times between 1911 and 1916. Let me give you the 1911 citation. This is reprint 4842. It should be clearly noticed that the parallels between the Jewish and gospel ages all belong to the nominal systems then and now, and if this be borne in mind, it will prevent our applying these parallels either to the gathering out of the gospel church or the gathering of the Lord's people out of Babylon now. That's 1911. So he's not using this as an excuse for a 1914 error. He's using it back in 1911 to say, brethren, we've been misstating, overstating, wrongly stating how we use the parallels. He says it has to do with the nominal systems and doesn't have anything to do with the gathering out of the gospel church, then or now. What do we call gathering out of the church? In one word? Harvest. Wow. By this statement, he is separating harvest from the parallels. I got to repeat that. By this statement, he is separating harvest from the parallels. When you see a chart of the ages, I'm going to be forceful. Don't you ever dare again say those are 40-year parallel harvests. Brother Russell said, no, that's our mistake. It's wrong. They're not 40-year parallel harvests. He said, it should be clearly noticed that the parallels between the Jewish and gospel ages all belong to the nominal systems then and now. And if this be borne in mind, it will prevent our applying these parallels either to the gathering out of the gospel church or the gathering of the Lord's people out of Babylon now. Don't apply the parallels to the harvest. It's not a 1916 change. It's a 1911 caution. Okay, I guess I got worked up. The parallels do not define harvest. Okay, it's time to turn the page. Now, this page looks considerably more complicated, but I think we'll see it's sort of simple in its concept also. Daniel chapter 9, you may want to open to that. We usually call this the 70-week parallels, those of us who talk about chronology at all. And the reason is, back in chapter 8... Chapter 9. Yeah, back in chapter 8, Daniel had been shown this vision of 2300 days, and he got, well, to put it bluntly, he got discouraged. It said he got sick. Like, oh my lands, I thought this was almost over, and now the Lord's tacking this huge period of time on the end of it. When we get to chapter 9, verse 24, he starts out by 70 weeks have been set apart for your people. 70 weeks of that 2300 days. And he's talking about weeks of years, 490 years. Been set apart for your people. That's why we usually refer to these things in Daniel 9 as the 70 weeks parallels. Because they seem also to be parallel. They apply at the end of the gospel age as well as the end of the Jewish age alike. Remember, these are separate now. We're not pulling these from the text we just looked at. This is additional. And we're going to see that it doesn't end at the same time. So why on earth did the Lord give these extensions of the double that we just looked at? And I think he did it for the sake of prophetic detail clarification for us. The 70 weeks were set apart for Israel to accomplish several things. Those of you who studied the 70 weeks, tell me what year they end in. 36. Okay, so you can tell they go beyond that thing we just talked about. Actually, the prophecy we're going to look at actually goes even further beyond that. Let's take a look at it. Because the double has two endings, 33 when Jesus cast off Israel, and 78 when Jesus cast off Babylon. The double extensions also have two endings. On your handout, you will see at the end of the period of favor, there's 29 A.D. Right below it is 1874. Then there's 33 that we saw earlier, and below it is 1878. Then there's 36, and right below it is 1881. And we're going to see, even though the number's not mentioned, that the event is mentioned, 70 A.D. and 1915. So these are parallels, and you notice how they relate there to the favor and disfavor periods. They both start before it ends, and they both go beyond where it ends. So these things Daniel's talking about are not directly linked except for one date to the parallels that we've been looking at. By dealing carefully with the events of the first Advent dates, we can interpret, without inflating the meanings, the second Advent dates. Let's look in Daniel and see what we find. Daniel 9:24, 70 weeks have been decreed for your people and your holy city. Then he makes a list. It's going to finish transgression, make an end of sin, make atonement for iniquity, etc., etc., etc. And he finally gets down in verse 25. He says, so you are to know and discern that from the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah, the prince, there will be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. Daniel's heart had to throb at that point. He says, he's going to tell me the date that Messiah is going to come. Isn't that marvelous? How the Lord must have loved Daniel. He says, Daniel, first thing I want to do is tell you when Messiah is coming. There's going to be 7 weeks and then 62 weeks and Messiah will come. That's a total of 69 weeks. Well, we know now, don't we? Even without computing from old history, we know when Messiah came. 29 A.D., he was baptized in Jordan, became Messiah. He became the anointed. So you can actually find the date earlier, 69 weeks of years earlier. You can go back and find when the decree was. And consequently, Brother Russell points us to the 20th year of King Artaxerxes. That's fine. Don't worry about that. Because we don't need that for our picture. But the fact is, there on your first top drawing, you see when Messiah comes. He comes in 29. All right, let's continue. Speaking of the rebuilding of Jerusalem, because there was a command to do so, it will be built again with plaza and moat, even in times of distress. Then, after the 62 weeks, Messiah will be cut off. You see the problem with that statement? He says Messiah comes at the end of the 62 weeks, and he says after the 62 weeks, Messiah is going to be cut off. He could have been cut off the same day, couldn't he? Really unclear at that point. But he wants to make you know, just because Messiah comes, everything's not going to be just wonderful. Messiah is going to get cut off. Now, that had to bother Daniel too. Daniel knew now when Messiah was going to come, but apparently it wasn't going to be too much of a success. Messiah is going to get cut off. And that date is given as we continue. Messiah will be cut off and have nothing, and the people of the prince who is to come will destroy the city and the sanctuary, and its end will come with a flood. Even to the end there will be a war. Desolations are determined. And he will make a firm covenant with many for 1 week, but in the middle of the week he will put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering. This shows you when Messiah is cut off, when he puts an end to the offerings. You remember in Jeremiah, says, I'm declaring this double because now you're offering abominations with your carcasses. Because Jesus' offering was made, it put an end to the offerings of the Jewish law. So we know the date. Jesus is cut off in 33. In the midst of the week. It says in the midst of the week. So that's 3.5 years after he came. Very plain. Now the verse I read over so fast. So fast. Says that some other prince is going to come and destroy the city. Well, that's Titus. And we know that from history. There's no date given here. You don't need a date because history is pretty plain. Titus came in late 69, which we call the year 70, and that's when Jerusalem was destroyed. So that date is just as firm, even though there's no number given in Daniel's prophecy. Daniel has supplied four dates. The coming of Messiah in 29, the cutting off of Messiah in the midst of the week, the end of the 70 weeks, which he doesn't say anything about, except that the prophecy said 70 weeks are set aside for your people. Keep that in mind. And then he said this other prince is going to come and destroy the city. That's where we get all four extension dates for the Jewish parallel. Don't add to them. I know you can get to 5950, and Brother Russell is rather frantically saying, what's going on? Maybe it's 3 years more, 1918, and everything will be over. Brother Russell was trying desperately to figure out what was about to happen, and the Lord didn't open that up to him. But we do have the scriptures, which Brother Russell most wisely said, and we shouldn't listen to him except that he did. Go to the scriptures. And so we've gone to the scriptures. Daniel said, here's the four dates which you can scripturally, permissibly extend the double. You can start 3.5 years before it ends when Messiah comes. You can have something happen at its end. You can have something waiting till the end of the 70 weeks still set aside for Israel. And then you can have a time when the destruction of the whole thing begins. That's it. I cannot stress too much, brethren. That is it. There is no more. 4 days from Daniel 9 to form a parallel. Now, those parallels on your bottom drawing are 1874, 1878, 1881, and 1915. Since Brother Russell, since 1911, made it so clear what we're supposed to do with those days. Let's do it. Let's not read any more into them except the judgment on the old system. So, if in 29, Messiah came, what did he do? He spent 3.5 years looking at Israel to see if it was worthy and preparing his spokesman, whom we know as the 12 apostles. That's what he did, didn't he? What's the parallel? Messiah comes 3.5 years before the second part of the double is over. And he does the same thing. He looks at the existing system to see how they're doing. And he prepares his spokesman, whom we know by the name of Charles Taze Russell. Okay, the parallel is sound, isn't it? And it has nothing to do with spiritual matters in the strictest sense. This is strictly talking about the judgment of the old order. Okay, second date, 33. What happens? Jesus rides into Jerusalem and says, your house is left unto you desolate. What's the parallel? 1878, Jesus says, fallen, fallen is Babylon. That's your parallel. He cast them off, just like he cast off Israel. He cast off the hierarchy. It's an important thing to remember. He cast off the hierarchy. Those who were responsible for the fact that when he was looking at and judging these systems, he found them wanting. He cast off the ones in charge. That's what happened in 1878 as well as in 33. But God had promised to Israel, you can have exclusive favor for another 3.5 years till the end of the 70 weeks. You know what that meant in practicality, don't you? That meant any Jew who wanted to be transferred into Christ simply had to get baptized by John's baptism that says, I really am faithfully trying to live up to the law and I'd like to be transferred into Messiah. That's all it was. And that's all they had to do. They simply had to express that faith, still being part of the old order. No Gentile could do that. And they were transferred into Messiah. You know what happened after that date? Actually, you do. You do because there happens to be an account. You know, I wrote that text down and I don't know what I did with it, but you'll know where it is anyway. I think it's in Acts. You remember Paul rides into town and there's this ecclesia that doesn't have the Holy Spirit. What's the very first question Paul asks? What baptism were you baptized with? Well, their first response when he says, do you have the Holy Spirit? They said, well, we haven't even heard that there is such a thing as the Holy Spirit. So he says, what baptism were you baptized with? And they said, John's, of course. Ah, now this isn't written in Acts. I'm expanding here, but this is precisely what happened. We have passed the 36th date. We have passed the end of the 70 weeks. Paul is basically saying, you must now be baptized by a new baptism because the old order, the whole old arrangement which gave you special favor is now defunct and you cannot benefit from it. And this is the time that Cornelius comes in. And we know that Cornelius comes in at this time simply because he's a Gentile and the 70 weeks were restricted for the Jews. And this poor little ecclesia that said, well, we did what everybody's been doing for years. We got baptized in John's baptism and nothing happened. And again, I'm filling in the corners, but Paul said, of course nothing happened. The 70 weeks are over. It doesn't work anymore. Okay, take it to the bottom. Now, 1881. If you look at the chart of the ages, there is a plane that we call the plane of justification, plane in. Anytime during the age, if somebody made a consecration to righteousness and dwelt on that plane, they were guaranteed a call. They were guaranteed a call. God called everyone, offered it to everyone on plain end. They didn't all answer. Many were called. Few were chosen because most of them said no thanks. And they remained on that plane of human justification because they liked it there. It was comfortable. Didn't require any sacrifice. But the fact is, up till then, you made a consecration, you received a call. What happens in 1881? You make a consecration and you expect it's going to be guaranteed acceptance, and God says, oh, no, that 70 weeks are over. It's no longer guaranteed to you any more than it was guaranteed to a Jew that he could be accepted. The call now becomes specialized. That's why Brother Russell calls that date the end of the, not the end of the call, the end of the general call. You know what general means? It means everybody. That's the point. Plain end was everybody was called. But there was a restriction date. It was 1881. Because he says, all right, we're 3.5 years past saying Babylon is fallen, is fallen. From this point, I will not guarantee anybody anything just because they happen to be related to that old order. Any more than I guaranteed any Jew anything just because they happen to be a Jew and related to the old order in the first advent. We've done those three parallels. That's all there is to them. The last one, Titus comes in to destroy Jerusalem. 1915, the beginning of the destruction of the old order begins. That's the parallels. That's the parallels from Daniel, not the parallels from the first text we took. Okay, that's, again, that's all there is to it. I've listed those four on the bottom of the outline for you just to summarize them. You notice you don't have to make any spiritual applications. It does not say when the church is glorified. It doesn't say anything about the true church. It only says things about the old order. That's it. Okay, let's take a little more. Not much more. Just a colorful little text here, Revelation 19. You might appreciate the wording. 19:11. I saw heaven open, and behold, a white horse, and he who sat upon it is called Faithful and True, and in righteousness he judges and wages war. Do you notice the two works of Jesus there? The first thing he does is judge. And then he wages war. So the judgment was 40 years up till 1915. And then he began to wage war. 40 is extremely legitimate. I do not want anyone to consider throwing away the 40-year parallel. Just don't call it a 40-year harvest. That's what messes it up. It is a 40-year parallel. 40 throughout the scriptures has always meant a complete period of testing. He judges, and then he makes war. 40 years, complete period of testing, judging, and then he makes war. Do you remember in Daniel 2 the image? Nebuchadnezzar saw a stone strike it on the feet. All started falling apart. I don't know whether you ever read carefully the one verse there. I better turn to it so I quote it correctly. In Daniel 2. <clears throat> 35. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed all at the same time, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away so that not a trace of them was found. But the stone that struck the statue became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. I know brethren disagree about when that happens. I'm a 1914 person there. I think that's part of the making war. But most particularly, do you notice how this image is carried away? It is carried away. The wind carried them away like the chaff from a summer threshing floor. What season are they carried away? Summer. Not in the winter time of trouble with which the age ends. This image is struck and it's still summertime. We've not yet reached the winter when everything closes in. All of the 20th century after 1914 is still summertime. By the way, if I were to ask you for a one-word summary of what a summer threshing floor is, what is it? It's a harvest. So it says the harvest continues after the image is struck. There's still summer threshing going on. While that image is being blown away slowly by the winds over the last nearly 100 years, The harvest is still going on. The summer threshing floor is still in operation. It goes along with Brother Russell's caution. Don't mix up the harvest with the parallels. Okay. There are no more chronology parallels stated or implied in the scriptures, despite the efforts of brethren to make them over the years. There are other dates in prophecy. Isaiah 23 talks about some horse 70 years or something, but we don't try to extend the parallels because you can't extend what Daniel said. Daniel said it and that's it. We're not Daniel's extensions or extenders. If the harvest is not 40 years, but it is an honest-to-goodness harvest, and you look at it on the chart of the ages, it ends with that dotted line, doesn't it? Do you remember? I think Jesus refers to that dotted line in Matthew 24. He says, heaven and earth will pass away. I think that's the dotted line. Matter of fact, I think Brother Russell came pretty close to that, because how did he define gospel age on the chart? From Jesus' baptism to the completion of the church, which is his body. That's the dotted line. That's the end. Okay? Jesus said in Matthew 24, heaven and earth will pass away, but of that day and hour. You notice he's not talking about his second presence like nominal church commentators say. He's talking about the date that heaven and earth pass away. Well, they're still here. He says, of that day knoweth no man, not the angels in heaven, if you have a King James, doesn't say this, nor the Son, but it does belong in there, but only my Father in heaven. And I'm one of those peculiar people who does think that Jesus himself may not yet know when the dotted line is. It's possible. The Father does reserve some things in his own counsel. So how do you deal with the resurrection of the sleeping saints? 1878. I'll close with that, Brother Larry. I think there's two really strong texts about that. One, kind of a prophecy in a type. The other, in a statement where I think Paul refers to parallels and then concludes that something else happens at one of those parallels. Okay, the first one, an interesting little type. You remember the text brethren argue about, Brother Russell tries to explain in Volume 2, back in 1 Kings 6, the one with the, quote, mistake in it, 540 years versus 400, and I've got the numbers wrong, whatever they are. I think the Lord made that there as a great, wonderful mistake because he wants to draw our attention to it. If you'll read it carefully, it says that in the reign of Solomon, you know, the first three kings of Israel were types of the three ages. Saul of the Jewish age, David of the gospel age, Solomon of the millennial age. In the reign of Solomon, in the third year of his reign, in the month Ziv, springtime. Now, if Solomon represents Jesus in his millennial reign, if you take into the third year, actually it's past the third year plus the month Ziv, brings you to the spring of 1878. What does it say Solomon did there? He began to build his temple, raising the sleeping saints. 1 Corinthians 15, Paul says, if the casting away of them, meaning Israel, at the beginning of the second part of the double, if the casting away of them be the riches of the Gentiles, because the church now gets called from the Gentiles, what shall the receiving of them be? What date is that? When are they received? 1878. What shall the receiving of them be but life from the dead? The resurrection of the sleeping saints. The beginning of the resurrection process. May the Lord add His blessing.
Thank you, Brother Dave. Seeing double.
Our gracious and holy Heavenly Father, we thank You that we have a part in Jesus by Thy grace through Thy calling. Help us to honor Thee as we pursue the honor of that calling. Where we err in interpreting Thy word, please overrule that it will not harm us, but help us in our search for understanding and appreciation. We're grateful for this time tonight to begin this convention.